Hello and welcome back to this episode of the Yellow and Blues podcast. As usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Venkat. Hello, Venkat. How are you?
Hi, Srini. I'm doing very well. Thanks. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. Given all the rain and everything in New Zealand and really not a lot of cricket, we decided to obviously postpone this in a bye week. So we'll probably look at the India versus New Zealand series, what little cricket there was played, and also probably do, you know, during the podcast at some point, you know, in this episode, we can potentially also look at the overall sort of dilution of cricket across the world in terms of, you know, relevance of series, etc. Just for any new listeners, before we look at all of those things, you know, reminder, if you haven't done so, you know, please subscribe to this podcast and leave your reviews and ratings about the podcast on Spotify, Apple iTunes, Google Podcast, or any of the other platforms that you normally get your podcast from. We're also on Twitter at Yellow and Blues, so don't forget to follow us on Twitter. So where shall we start with, Venkat? Now let's start with, you know, this, as I said, you know, there's not a lot that's happened with the India-New Zealand series. You know, three of the games sort of probably have some sort of, you know, rain impacted. Was it the first T20 that got rained out?
First T20 was washed off.
I think the third one was tied again due to rain, you know, rain affected the third one.
Yeah.
The ODI again, they played the first one, the second one rained out.
Third one is also, they're saying that there's more chance of rained out, not wanting to disappoint anybody, but it doesn't look very positive.
Second T20I, I think what little cricket has been played, you know, especially on the T20I front, you know, we still need to look at Surya Kumar Yadav's century. He, amongst all the gloom and, you know, he definitely like sparkled, brightened the sky, or the, you know, trying to find some puns around sky and brightening, etc.
Yeah, it was a monster knock. I mean, the one thing that I came to know about this knock, because I was I was watching the highlights the next day, but really, Maxwell in a TikTok interview or one of those Twitter feeds was talking about some play. He says he's playing there's some of the most ridiculous shots and is doing it stupidly consistently. And he said, you know, I'm just awestruck looking at him play. And that's, I think, is a big credit coming from a hitter himself. Of course, it's always better to come from opposition and opponents than from somebody from the team. I think it was one of those podcasts that Glenn Maxwell was part of. I think the Great Cricketer podcast, he was saying he's just making us feel really bad. So that's the message he was saying, that how do you play with somebody who's making it so ridiculously easy?
Yeah, I mean, it's always great compliment. I remember as well, you know, sort of social media getting setting up players, not just by, you know, Twitter, etc., but former players, current players, yeah, coaches and everything, you know, and talking about Surya Kumar Yadav's innings. The other thing in you know, amongst all of those things is, was like, there could have been potentially two hat-tricks in that match. You know, as it happened, you know, there was only one hat-trick for Tim Saudi, but Deepak Hooda could also have had a hat-trick. He missed by one delivery.
He did miss by one delivery, and he would have, I think it was a close chance if I remember it right. But anyway, I mean, yeah, that he did. He doesn't have a hat-trick to his name. International hat-trick would be good. But you do get this more often in T20 than in other formats, because people are not bothered about wickets, especially towards the latter half of the innings. And in New Zealand's case, in that game, I don't think anybody was bothered about wickets. they just were throwing it away in that particular game.
The one thing about that particular innings was like, you know, it almost felt like Surya Kumar Yadav was playing in a what you would call like, you know, a PlayStation mode where you sort of get into God mode and you control everybody and, you know, play. Yeah. It was completely like, you know, unrealistic. You feel like you can't keep that kind of batting going on and over and over, but you know, he just what was it? I think 51 balls to what, 11 sixes or something like that. In that 111. It was like, you know, you've got to put some of those caveats in as well. You know, the grounds in New Zealand aren't the biggest, etc. But equally, you have to think like, you know, well, he was the only one that was able to do it. You know, the rest of, from both sides, you know, nobody was able to play that kind of an inning. So it does, you know, require something special.
It reminded me of one of these, not old, but any of these Bollywood movies where the superstar could do anything. Where the hero could do anything under the sun. that innings reminded me, it was like, you know, kind of scooping it 6-4. And yeah, it was just the audacity with which he played that innings. It reminded me of A.B. de Villiers, and it's a high praise indeed. But yeah, I mean, really, from that innings, I mean, if you look at it, the next best score, I think Kane Williamson is 61, but he was striking at 117. But the next, I mean, between Kane Williamson and Surya Kumar Yadav, they were the only two players. The rest all didn't even cross like 25 or something like that. Yeah, probably Shankishan was 36, but rest all found it incredibly difficult. So that just goes to show the class difference.
Yeah,
two innings late in Surya Kumar Yadav's case, that would have been, made a huge difference. But hey, at least, you know, he played this. You know,
right. Yeah, you can see the chalk and cheese of nature between, you know, Kane Williams and Surya Kumar Yadav. 52 balls, Kane Williams faced to score 61, yeah, as opposed to like, you know, Surya Kumar Yadav, 51 balls, 111.
Yeah, almost double the strike rate, 217 versus 117. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
That's completely like, you know, different. There was nothing else in that T20 series really to like, you know, write home about. I think that was probably the only highlight of that entire T20 series.
Yep.
The other one game, you know, so far in the ODI series has been the one that India lost, you know, having scored 306 and so comfortably chased by New Zealand. You know, they actually like, well, almost 3 overs to spare.
Yeah.
They scored that. Kane Williamson, you know, not out 94, and Tom Latham 145. You know, Williamson missed out on 100. But you look at that and you're thinking, I mean, was it because of India's second string bowling attack, you know, that couldn't keep them in 300? It definitely shouldn't be easy chasing 300. Is India's second string bowling not good enough?
No, I think that is also, you got to give credit where it's due. You know, that game, I think Kane Williamson really played the anchor role, especially after the first two, Finnell and Conway were out. And then he started playing that innings and Tom Latham. I think it's almost like the players, Shardul Thakur went for a few, Ashdeep Singh, yeah. You played two wrist spinners in that game, Washington Sundar and Yuzvendra Chahal. There's not much of bowling there. Our experience, I would say, in these conditions. And Kane Williamson knows, I mean, it's his backyard. He's a different beast in that kind of format. I mean, he can time it, he can play the waiting game unlike a T20. Where it does, that format doesn't suit him. Whereas Latham and Williamson are tailor-made for these formats. So no wonder that they kind of went on to succeed in that game. And yeah, the other thing I noticed was, I know it's a bit silly, but I think top five or six batters in that game all had S, Ashikar, Shubham, Shreyas, Surya, Sanju, Shardul. It's like, except Rishabh Pant and Washington Sundar, they were all...
Washington Sundar also, you could say, like, you know.
Rishabh Pant's
the odd man. It's like a pub quiz question, you know. What's the odd man? Who's the odd man out in this Rishabh Pant, you know? Because he doesn't, like, he doesn't have an S in his, you know, starting his first name or last name. I mean, again, we talked about this in the last episode about, was there a point in going with this team, because this should have been probably starting the building block for the 2023 World Cup. How many of these players are actually going to be, you know, especially from a bowling batting perspective, going to be playing in the World Cup? I don't know. It's like, you know, maybe you can say, like, you know, are they, even if they did play in the World Cup, playing in New Zealand, you know, in that pitch, those conditions, it's not the same thing as playing in India. So it might be like a different experience. I mean, I'm looking at, we'll probably look at, you know, in a bit, around the Bangladesh squad, India start the rodeo in Bangladesh next week, you know, coming back from this. And there's probably quite a bit of a difference in terms of the squad. There's a bit of, I think, change. So Shahbaz Ahmad's been called off because Ravindra Jadeja is now out. I know the big guns in terms of those are all back, with Virat Kohli, KL Rahul, Rohit Sharma obviously leading the captaincy for the ODI squad. I'm almost looking at the bowling, you know, in compared to the bowlers in New Zealand. You know, I don't think Umran Malik is going to...
Yeah, Umran Malik is not here. I think Akshar Patel comes back. Akshar Patel.
Ashdeep Singh isn't there. You know, Mohammad Siraj goes in. Deepak Chahar is...
Kuldeep Sen,
yeah, he's a right arm fast bowler, isn't it? And then Mohammad Shami returns. Obviously, Bumrah is still not fit.
But at least from the squad point of view, this is more closer to the full. I think I see the rationale. I see the rationale that the New Zealand tour is more, you don't want to put everybody there because that form, that venue condition is not closer. Whereas if you see here, I think this resembles the squad that would be more so playing the World Cup, or most World Cup probables that will be picked from here. I mean, Rohit Sharma, KL Rahul, Shikhar Dhawan, Virat Kohli, Shreyas Iyer, very doubtful whether he would make it eventually in the squad. I'm really doubtful. Rishabh Pant, Ishan, you know, you have a couple of wicketkeepers. Washington's interaction, but it all makes sense, isn't it? Mashami, Siraj, more so looks like a, you know, World Cup squad now, if you throw another proper race spinner.
And you include the likes of, you know, Bumrah and Jadeja, and probably drop one or two people. I mean, Ashdeep Singh, I would have probably still had him in there. I know they've probably given him a break after having played the World Cup and then following, you know, the New Zealand series.
And then the ODI series. Yeah.
Because I still think, like, you know, a left armer, anecdotally, like, you know, maybe there are statistics to back up, but if you think about it, in the most World Cups that's been won, the left armer has had an impact, you know, whether it's back in sort of 1991, Wasim Akram, or subsequently, like, you know, whether it's Mitchell Johnson, Mitchell Stark now, 2003 as well, you know, India didn't win, but Zahir Khan, or Ashish Nehra as well in the 2011 World Cup in India won. I'm trying to think of, like, maybe 2019 might have been an anomaly in terms of, or if there was anybody there with a left arm pace. But they obviously had, like, you know, the likes of Jofra Archer and Mark Wood, etc. So they maybe might have been a different. But generally, you tend to see, like, you know, left armers have a big say, sort of, you know, in the World Cup. As I said, I don't think statistically, you know, whether it backs up or not, but more an anecdotally. So I would probably still look at, like, you know, building Ashdeep's confidence, you know, in the ODI format. He still needs a lot more experience, because it's different bowling 4 overs in a T20I versus 10 overs in, you know, ODI. So I would probably want to see, like, Ashdeep playing a little bit more and building towards that World Cup, which now is in October, November. So that's probably, you know, I think India really need to start focusing. We should kind of also, because I think we missed out last week, you know, the news of, because I was going to talk about, like, you know, start to build towards the World Cup squads picking and etc.
Yeah.
But the fact that all of the selectors were sacked, which was a complete surprise and came out of the blue. What did you make of that one?
Yeah, I think, you know, they are looking at change of guard. I think some of the selection has been, you know, kind of questionable. So I'm definite that they are looking to infuse some new blood and new thinking process in that. So I think, yeah, that's definitely some. I mean, it was surprising, but I think our selectors have also, they need to, you know, kind of look at taking some of the responsibility.
Yeah, but that said, in the once they had sacked all of the selectors, it was announced, like, you know, if you have to apply for the new selectors post, the candidate should have played a minimum of 7 test matches or 30 first class matches.
Yeah.
Or 10 ODIs and 20 first class matches, either or kind of thing. And they should have retired from the game at least 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That's the criteria, like, you know, the BCCI put out. And then
it looks like something shoehorned to fit a certain specific set of players, I suppose. Who knows?
It is, but I'm just going to say, like, you know, Luke Wright, who retired from professional cricket like a week ago, and literally as soon as he retired from cricket, he was, like, you know, announced as the selector for England.
Yeah.
That just shows, like, you know, how, not from a player perspective, but an administrative perspective, you know, sort of thinking are so different. Here, India are saying, like, you know, the player should have been retired at least 5 years ago.
Good point.
As opposed to, like, you know, they're talking about somebody who's just literally retired a week ago.
Yeah, I think there is also the lines of what is ethical often blurs within our system, Indian system, whereas here it's a lot more tighter in terms of how, what disclosures and this and that, and all the players, the majority ones, have some stake as a player, as an admin coach or whatever in one of the franchises and whatnot. So I don't know if that is to do with anything to eliminate some of these you know, conflicts of interest that may arise.
I don't know,
but I take your point. I mean, the more closer you are, I would rather have Dhoni as a chief selector if given a chance for his identification of talent. But then, yeah, he's not yet retired from cricket in one sense, I suppose, because he's still playing for CSK.
What it does is, like, you know, it kind of gives you someone who's closer to the game, or, like, you know, sort of understands the game, you know, in recent ways. I mean, relatively, like, you know, you can pick this up to Ravi Shastri's recent comments talking about how there were two different comments I wanted to pick up on. One, it says, like, you know, India needs to adopt the England mindset of going and playing like the way the England white ball team are playing. And then the other one, he said, I think, Sanju Samson, you know, players like that should be given a run of at least 10 games to fail before they are, like, discarded. And it made me think about how, you know, Well, what's partially what is Ravi Shastri's legacy in terms of cricket? You know, you can talk about it. You think the 7 years when Ravi Shastri was the coach, or most the majority of the 7 years, you know, he literally saw England from that 2015 World Cup to, like, you know, how they changed, and he was the coach during that period for India. And I just couldn't get my head around the fact when he said, like, you know, oh, India need to adopt that, as to why he didn't implement it if he knew that bit. It feels like, you know, a bit of like coming outside and then saying this is what India should do. So it kind of shows it's so easy to be a pundit or, you know, speak from outside.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it is. I think there is a bit of freedom as well. I mean, we don't know what all went through and whether the players really, I mean, of course, as a captain, you would have some say in, you know, a coach is not by himself. I mean, he still, I mean, there are those politics and whatever internal dynamics within, from the selection committee to coach to the captain. Whereas when you're coming and talking from outside, it becomes a lot more of your own personal choice. So I can understand. I'm not rationalizing Ravi Shastri, but I think that could be one of the reasons why he's a bit more unhinged with respect to his comments. He may not have had the full freedom when he was the administrator or the coach.
Yeah, but in terms of, like, you know, the selection pieces, you think, like, you know, if he believes that, you know, somebody like Sanju Samson should have been backed or should be backed for a stretch of games, surely, like, you know, things like that, you know, there's in the last 7 years Sanju Samson was picked and dropped so many times.
We
justify the reason why, you know, he goes into the IPL and he performs, and then he comes into the India colours, he doesn't quite deliver. So it's hard to, like, you know, maintain that. But to me it was, like, you know, sort of almost not, you know, the what's the term?
Yeah, he was almost pipping him for not only the chance for player, but as the future captain, which was a bit surprising. When you clearly have Hardik Pandya, who is an all-rounder. Yes, of course, Sanju Samson, by virtue of him being a keeper, is also an all-rounder. But, you know, you would think that clearly the lines in terms of the successes that Hardik Pandya has bought the Indian team is far more than what Sanju Samson has brought to the Indian team, I suppose.
This the fallout from, sort of, you know, India's loss in that T20 semifinals, World Cup semifinals. There's been so many of these things coming out. I mean, I don't know if you saw, there was this other comment from Harbhajan Singh saying, like, you know, Nehra should become the T20 coach, you know, and Rahul Dravid should be, like, you know, left to rest to ODI and test match sort of coach.
I think coaching, people misunderstand coaching. I mean, they always it's like saying Sachin Tendulkar as a captain, right? When you compare somebody as a player and their ability to coach somebody is completely different. I think people need to understand that. And, you know, coming in from HR background, I can convincingly say that if I'm hiring somebody for a position, you obviously look at previous experience, but their ability to get somebody else to do that job is completely different to whether you can do it yourself in the field. So, yes, that. But what kind of stood out in that comment for me, even I felt, was the point that we touched upon some time back, which was people who are disconnected from the setup. And they may not be able to understand the nuances of modern game. Can you imagine Rahul Dravid and going and having a chat with Surya Kumar Yadav, where Rahul Dravid all his life has played within the V and is the most stylish batsman in terms of technically correct, Whereas here comes a guy whose body full of tattoos and, you know, just chews gum and as though, you know, everything antithesis to the coaching barrel, plays a fast bowler into fine leg for a six. I think that disconnect is what probably justifies Harbhajan's point of view.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you know, again, it's, but then there is also the point about, like, you know, at this level, are you, you know, at an international level, are you really coaching players, or is it more about sort of man management, the mental side of it? If you think about India's, you know, we talked about this at length in the last episode of the podcast, you know, India's loss in that World Cup, it was not like due to lack of talent. It was more the mental strength to say, like, you know, in the semifinals, you know, being brave. We touched around the fact that in ODI, sort of on bilateral series, etc., they go at, look at them, you know, scoring 191 in, you know, that New Zealand game, T20I, or scoring 300 plus in the ODI. So when it comes to bilateral, they seem to be far more free. Is it because, like, you know, or even going back to the sort of league game stage, because they're not shackled by expectations or this fear of failure thing? If you fail in this game, you know, we're out of the World Cup. And that's not about skill. That's about mentality thing. So the likes of, like, you know, probably that's where I would look at things, like, you know, surely the likes of Rahul Dravid should be, like, you know, well-equipped to manage that, especially the fact given, like, you know, he's unlike a lot of our previous selectors who just came in and the first team, whereas Rahul's kind of managed so many of these players more at the under-19 level, where it's all about, like, you know, there is a lot of coaching required there, you know, because you're still fine-tuning people's games. And also, like, you know, a huge mental coaching is required there to keep the youngsters' feet on the ground, you know, when they get to a semi-finals and the finals, etc. So in some ways, I would have thought, like, you know, Rahul Dravid was a perfectly suited guy to manage. But obviously, you look at from that perspective, clearly, like, you know, it's not something just delivered. So this conversation will go on a little bit longer in that. So we'll see how that pans out. You know, do the new selectors too? And you know, the frustration for me is, like, I think, again, I touched this on this last, like, if you pick a business, you'll think about, like, you know, what's the strategy or the roadmap for the next 3 years. India, you know, the BCCI just don't seem to have, like, a solid roadmap or a strategy for saying, like, you know, right, we want to win the 2023 World Cup or the 2024 T20 World Cup. The approach seems to be, like, you know, we've got people with talent.
Yeah.
That will deliver it, rather than all parts of the system coherently working to say, everybody's working toward that one single goal. This is the coach. Yeah. This is what is driving it. India just don't seem to have it.
No, absolutely. I mean, I was thinking the other day, if India went to World Cup like this, we would probably get into one of the semifinals. But given how strong the teams are, I think it would be one between Australia, England, and, you know, one of the dark horses, probably Pakistan or something like that, and probably South Africa even. Because, but yeah, I don't see. I mean, Indian conditions and all that is fine. But if you're not, these guys all have lost all the home advantage. Everybody is playing in India now. For a significant, at least a month and a half, which is good enough practice for most players.
Yeah, even Joe Root's, like, wanting to play in the IPL this year to get preparing for the World Cup. Exactly.
That shows the intent and the preparation versus how we view it, and as me, I hope BCCA views it, or whatever all the players view it. But anyway,
yeah
that also brings to one of the favorite topics that you had, I think, Australia, which was the thing of too much cricket, right? I mean, so some of these could be influenced that.
Yeah. So I mean, before just quickly before we go that, you know, you mentioned like, you know, the dark horses probably South Africa. Actually, if you look at the qualifying tables, you know, South Africa and Sri Lanka might actually end up playing into a qualifying league to qualify for the World Cup. You know, that's how far they are. I think yesterday, Afghanistan versus Sri Lanka game that rained out means Afghanistan actually qualify in the top eight teams that qualify.
Wow.
South Africa and Sri Lanka have to actually play in a tournament probably in Zimbabwe next year with other associates, etc. to qualify. I'm sure they will make it into the last two slot, but it might not be that easy. We may well actually see one of Sri Lanka, South Africa, or Zimbabwe miss out in the World Cup. So that would be an interesting one. You mentioned about the overdose of cricket.
Yeah,
there was a series recently between Australia and England right after the World Cup. You know, and Australia lost 3-0. And Josh Butler said he was not really fussed about losing the series because he really didn't care. For me, it was like, you know, when a captain of a World Cup winning team sort of says like, "No, yeah, we lost the series, no big deal." It kind of suddenly feels like, you know, there is so much. I mean, the ground was completely empty for those games. You know, nobody cared about that series. That series didn't even matter for the ODI Super League, you know, points. It was just played because there was broadcaster commitments. Other than that, there was no other reason to play that World Cup.
I think especially the longer format, the ODIs, I think it's a bit boring. It's just dragging and there's no context. I think there are lots of factors like that. I think they have to do something drastic to at least ODI. I mean, at least T20 you can bear because it's only 3 to 4 hours. Especially, I mean, there are a couple of points I want to talk. I think it's not very professional of Josh Butler to have said that he really doesn't care. I understand fatigue and all that, but you still have a job. We all have a professional life. And in my professional life, somebody turned out and said, yeah, I really didn't worry because it was not. I think you would be met with a different reaction. And I think it doesn't send the right message to up-and-coming players within the English system. Whether it is in agreement or not with respect to the amount of cricket, I think it should have still maintained some kind of politically correct answer would have been good enough. But coming back to the issue of too much cricket, I do agree there are so many games, and even as diehard cricket fans, I couldn't kind of pull myself up to follow any of these games. Because they lack context, what they've done for the test series is good because every test match now has a relevancy in the World Cup test championship. But really, ODI kind of lacks that, and we got to do something probably squeeze at the end the World Cup format. Have only 4 or 5 countries play, and then have all the bilateral series contribute to that. Somehow they have got to do something, but there is definitely too much cricket.
We started the series with India and New Zealand. Even that just felt like, you know, a pointless series. I know for us here in England, you know, most of the games played across the other side of the world in New Zealand, it was sort of midnight or early morning games. So, you know, we quite couldn't keep up with it, you know, but even otherwise, I just think it's an India team playing there, but it barely even registered in my conscious, like, you know, that there were games on. Also, you know, from an IPL, from a T20 perspective, you talked about it, you know, the Big Bash starts, I think, back end of sometime in December, followed by, and it goes into, like, you know, December into January. But then you've also got the South African T20 that starts in January, going on January into February. At the same time, you also have the UAE T20 that runs, I think, almost at the parallel same time. So there's 3 T20 leagues running almost parallelly. And you think, how are, like, you know, fans going to keep track of who's playing where? And as that kind of comes to the end, you've got the PSL and the Bangladesh Premier League that kind of runs into that. And then as that ends, you've got the IPL coming in. And in and amongst all of these things, you know, then India and Australia are playing a test series. India are playing Sri Lanka for a test series. So the amount of cricket that's going on, you know, it's almost each country's fans only care about their own and, you know, keep an eye out on that one. The rest of the one, they just ignore. Or you just can't keep, you know, the it seriously is becoming oversaturated. There's definitely an overkill that's happening in cricket. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is, but you know, they've definitely got to find a way.
I think it will be down to the market and the audience that will filter out some of these games. I think that's it's just now at the, you know, whatever is the growth phase and the honoring previous contracts and all that. In the next 10 years, I think there'll definitely be that consolidation in terms of because of the OTT platforms coming in, how the broadcasting is going to be looked at. And so there's a lot more to it. And of course, player fit, I mean, not only player fatigue, but audience fatigue as well. If you now data drives everything, right? And you will find that as they gather the data and say, okay, I mean, this bilateral series has no audience of 1 million or whatever that is worldwide, not going to cut it. They will definitely see this fall in ad revenues, and then that will have a spiraling effect. Hopefully, let's see. I think that's the eventual way capitalism works. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, amongst all of this, like when we talked about all this, too much cricket and etc., there's a couple of things, you know, so that gets lost in this thing. You know, we've always said, you know, this podcast is kind of biased towards Indian cricket and also the CSK, so we always keep an out on for our segment called as Lions Watch, you know, looking at what the CSK Lions are doing when they play for other teams. Ritraj Gaikwad, you know, smashing 7 sixes in an over. That was like, you know, I don't know if you saw that, you know, on the clip.
I did on the Twitter. I think, we did have. That was something else. All the strikes were absolutely clean. So,
and the other one was N. Jagdishan, you know, who actually CSK have let go, you know, before the IPL auction. He went on to score 277, setting up a world record, like, you know, with fifth, I think, straight 100.
I think he's sending out a message to CSK once he has
stopped. Yeah. So hopefully, like, you know, they repick him. But again, ODI versus T20, you know, hopefully MS Dhoni is back at the helm for IPL, I think, for CSK. And I think the 23rd December, isn't it, the IPL auction. So we'll see how a new look CSK looks for next year. And also to keep an eye out on our sister team, the Johannesburg Super Kings, starting the South Africa T20 series early in the new year.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to have a look at this. By the time I think we record the next podcast, the remaining New Zealand series, the New Zealand series will be finished with. Hopefully, that game gets played, and then, you know, the first ODI also in Bangladesh will have happened. So we'll have a look at those things and other news. So we'll probably, you know, it's a good time to like wrap up this episode of the Yellow and Blues podcast. As a reminder again, if you haven't already subscribed, do subscribe to us and leave your reviews and comments. And so until next week, as we look forward to the Bangladesh tour, goodbye from me and Venkat.